Welcome to the Up the Cream podcast, episode 22. I'm Dan Tomlinson, and I'm joined, as always, by Rich Harrison, a.k.a. Pommy. Rich, how you doing, pal?
Well, mate, and you?
Yeah, meh. No, I'm good, mate, I'm good, I'm well, thank you. But, yeah, bit of a downward spiral at Hull, aren't we, at the moment, with three consecutive defeats. Now, back-to-back weekend, lost to Leeds on Thursday night, 22-12, and St Helens Monday night, 42-10. Not great.
No, not great at all. And it's creeping back, isn't it? It's back to the old Hull. It's back to the rudderless, heads down, you know, bad body language after we go behind. It's starting to look like a Hull with less resilience than we've seen for the rest of the season.
Absolutely. Yeah, the thing is with all our best players obviously cover our holes, and we've seen that this year. Jake Connor has obviously covered our attacking issues by fullback with 17 try assists in 11 games that he's played. Chris Satai and Liggy Sow as well cover our holes in the forwards because they are absolutely phenomenal. Particular Satai is a wrecking ball, and it's not even a contest right now. He's comfortably the best prop in Soap League, and that's by a country mile. And it shows right across the squad. I mean, our only back with genuine pace is Adam Swift. Again, he's took the lead this year. He's been Leicester's best winger by far. But yeah, it just shows our best and worst in that squad is substantial. It really is. And it goes down to what we've said all season, mate. The fact that we have gone supposedly quality over quantity. It's a very skinny squad. We knew the score. We knew that when the injuries bit and when you'd go, you know, against these bigger sides, your Leeds is, your St Helens is. It don't get any easier, does it? Because it's Catalans and Warrington next. Or should I say Warrington and Catalans next? It don't get any easier, does it? And when you get stretched and when we've got a skinny squad, it's gonna show. We just haven't got the players to step in and fill those holes. And yeah, unfortunately, it showed against a very good St Helens side. But the Leeds one was probably more frustrating because that was a must-win given the fixtures that we've got.
It was there for the taking.
Yeah, the amount of possession we had was ridiculous, and it wasn't like the opportunities were there not to win. You know, we were camped on their line, sometimes four sets at a time, and just couldn't do anything with the ball.
I think to your point as well, from how you opened that little opening monologue, mate, is that, you know, our best players have been the ones that have kind of filled the gaps and have papered over the cracks a little bit. But the best teams and the best squads can score from anywhere and from any player. You know, and we haven't got that. We haven't, you know, yes, Connor's not there, but when Connor's not there, who takes over? Well, nobody does. You know, it pains me to say it, but, you know, you've got some senior professionals there that look like they're lost. You know, there's a real lack of direction at the moment. You've got Fanua going backwards over the last 4 weeks, and I'm, you know, I like Maher and everything, but again, you've got to question why we signed him when we already had Farima, who was exactly the same player. We signed him because we didn't want anyone else to have him, really, rather than because we needed him. And I think on current form, he's struggling. He's really struggling. I think Sneed's doing his absolute level best, but he's doing so much defence and so much messing around and having to try to organise a dispirited squad that half the time he's not got the energy left to do anything with the ball when he gets it. I think Reynolds has been hit and miss the last couple of weeks. I honestly think he's not 100% fit. I think the COVID thing might have taken more out of him than he cares to admit to himself. You know, we look clueless from dummy half, whether it's Johnston or whether it's Houghton. You've got Sow and Satai trying really hard, but there's no one else in the pack really backing it up. You know, we haven't got any pace. The only pace we've got is Swift. And, you know, we've got Griffin long-term injured. We've got Connor being out for the last, what, six matches. We've had Taylor missing most of the season. You know, we look bloody skinny. We really do. I don't, you know, that's a squad problem. That's an organisational problem that we've got, because the squad that we've got cannot cover everything. They tried, and they've, you know, we've done it manfully. When we've had, you know, that backs to the wall ragtag Hull team that beat Huddersfield, was players playing out of position, and you know, players making debuts, players coming in on loan, players on the bench that have didn't even get on, you know, and all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, you can only do that a couple of times before teams find you out. And I just think that people have studied the way Hull play. They've studied the fact that, you know, we're all about 100% endurance on our own try line and everything. And teams have looked at the videos and gone, hang on a minute, there's a way through there. There's a way through here. Why don't we attack this way, attack way? It just feels like we've been found out a little bit. And we've got no plan B. That's what it looks like.
No, I agree with all of that. I mean, let's just get straight down to it now. You look at that squad right now, and you've just singled out one player. And some people think it's tough to single out players, especially in defeats. But I'll tell you what, Maya Fenua is on six figures at Hull FC. No doubt about that. He is one. If you've got a handful of Hull FC players, he's in the top five earners, 100%. I would bet my life on that. He's come back to the club. He's a shadow of his former self. Again, it's a fact. Yeah. And let's not forget, we looked at Maya Fenua with rose-tilted glasses in 2016 and 2017, because whilst he did some incredible things, he still had that error in him, that missed tackle.
Oh, he always had an error.
It was always in him. Yeah, always. And come back to the club, like I say, on huge money. I always remember it, because it was Catalans away 2019. We did the week in the rep, me and a group of lads. And literally, we beat Catalans 50 points to 10. So there you go, right? You keep it going. You're announcing new deals, you're announcing new signings, because when you've just won by that margin, everyone's absolutely buzzing. They're on cloud nine.
Yep.
You know, you got a derby the week after, as it was. You know, you get your good news out, don't you? So they did that. They announced the signing of Adam Swift. They announced the 2-year contract extension for Brett Farima. We also announced a contract extension for Rato and Lago. Now you're thinking, great, right? That's three decent wingers there. You know, Adam Swift, good player at St. Helens for the past, you know, 10 whatever years. Yeah, great. Rato and Lago, raw, but frightening speed. We've got him for another year. Fantastic. Freemo, I really like Freemo. Powerful winger, you know, really, really good. Great, absolutely fantastic. Oh, and then we're going out to the signing of Maher Fenua. You're thinking, all right, okay, where's he going to play? Does he go straight into that side? Does he go, you know, you're thinking, Christ, okay. We've gone really bottom heavy on backs. It wasn't needed. And it's as simple as that. And you've mentioned management already. You're sort of thinking, if fans can see this, how can the club not see it? How can the club not see that? That's a huge chunk of our cap spent on a player that we didn't need. And we still don't need now. He's an absolute liability. And I hate to say it, because let's say he's had moments at Wembley where he put himself into hero status, didn't he, when he took that sneak kick out to score the first try in 2016, obviously two in 2017. But you look at him now, he looks overweight. He looks too nonchalant in everything he does. Like, there was incidents last night. Kevin Naguama made him look like a turnstile for Tommy Makinson's try to put St. Helens 8-0 up. I must admit, the middle third against St. Helens, it was a really poor start and a really poor finish. The poor finish was because of the two sin bins. We'll come on to them later. The poor start was just St. Helens, where they came out of the blocks. They were fast. James Roby at 36 years old, whatever he is, and no hair. He's still absolutely phenomenal. He just ripped us apart. But that middle 30 was really good. But anyway, we get ourselves back in the game. It's 18-10. We get a set restart, and it's a right bloody game now. It's a contest, and you're thinking the crowd's up. You know, he's got a bit between the teeth, and the tails are up. Ball gets shipped out to Maya Fenua. What does he do? He drops it one-on-one. You think, for God's sake, it's these huge mistakes, and he's always had them in him. And again,
yeah, not totally.
It's
He's
harsh.
Always had those mistakes. Yeah,
it is, and it's harsh to single out players, but that's the reality of it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and look, that's what did for him at West Tigers. He had that injury and everything, but they'd already decided they weren't going to renew his contract after the 2 years that they signed him for before he got that injury. And it was exactly that. It was the silly mistakes. It was dropping the ball on the first tackle. It was going missing and going wandering off his wing, and his wing was like a highway for the opposition winger, especially if it was a winger with a bit of pace. You know, there's a real school of thought for me. When a winger really slows down, you know, do you say to him enough's enough, or do you say to him, you know, why don't you put a bit of beef on and go in the second row? But you can't do that with Maher, because, all right, yeah, he runs fast and, you know, he makes plenty of metres out of coming out of his own half and yardage and everything with the first couple of drives in a set of six. But that constant motion he's going to need to be a second draw forward, he's not got it. He hasn't got that level of fitness. and he's too positionally naive to be a decent centre. So you've kind of got to put him on the wing. And then, like you say, when he comes up against a classy opponent, or he comes up against a Nakama, who he replaced at the Tigers, let's not forget. Mahe replaced Nakama at the Tigers. You know, he looks bloody ordinary. And when you add the mistakes into it, and you add the fact that he misses tackles and he drops the ball, and he can give away a penalty as well when he mistimes a tackle. Yeah, he's a bloody liability. But if he gets his form right, when he gets his timing right, when he hits, players stay hit. You know, and when he comes onto the ball at speed, he's bloody hard to stop over 10 or 15 metres. The problem is, after 15 metres, he's blowing for a tug. You know, he's desperate for a rest. Yeah. And, you know, we take the piss out of, what's his name at Leeds?
Conrad Earl.
For exactly the same thing.
Right, you're absolutely bang on. You know, yeah.
Yeah, you know, he's box office and everything, but, you know, Carlos made Hurrell look like an absolute cart horse a couple of seasons ago, the first game of the season.
Josh Griffin
Leeds.
Did it at Edinley, you know, a few weeks
ago. So did Josh Griffin, yeah. They've all made him look like a complete fool. And it's getting that way with Mahe, unfortunately. He needs to find form and he needs to find it quickly. Otherwise, you know, you've got to hope that someone with a little bit of balls is going to look at it and go, well, I'm sorry, Mahe, but, you know, you haven't produced. You know, next year's his last season, isn't it? We signed him on 3-year deal, didn't
That's
we?
That's right, yeah. And it's depressing. And we've got a very good player in Brett Freemo who's been shipped out because of this.
Yes,
we need a quarter spot to sign a forward, or arguably more important, is an hooker. And there's one going right now in Super League who I'd be throwing fucking every single, you know, coin we've got left at him. But
Pates.
Yeah, Nathan Peets, yeah, short-term deal at Huddersfield. Get him signed up now, because that is exactly what we need, an hooker that can dart out the ruck. And I mentioned it in the latest Up the Cream. I've seen Tim Fellow right there. He's already banged the drum about it and on his Twitter page. Get him signed up. But yeah, the Freemo thing's a joke, because like you say, we're losing a very good player in Freemo because of that quarter spot. And you think, again, you bang that drum, the money for Noah is on, and what he's producing. I mean, you look at Mitalai Vulcikapani coming in again last night, doesn't put a foot wrong, and he's probably on, what, a sixth, a seventh of his wage, and he's offering more right now than what Fanua is, and he's played 4 games of rugby league in his life.
Yeah, it's sad, isn't it? It's sad but true. And, you know, I've stuck up for my ear. Like, I stick up for any old player when I think that, you know, there's that old saying, isn't it, form's temporary, class is permanent. But I think it's probably the opposite with Mahe, in that he hasn't really got a lot of genuine class, but he's always got that enthusiasm. And that's always kind of made up for him being a bit rough around the edges, the fact that he plays with a smile on his face and that, you know, there's an honest mistake in him, but he'll try his absolute best. The problem we've got at the moment is that he looks unfit. He probably looks about 5-10 kilos overweight. You know, it's not good enough.
It's not.
Simple as.
And it's not. And the reason you go on individual crusade with him is literally because of the wages on. I might just say, you mentioned one there, Vulcikapani, who's on little wage. I mean, even people like Adam Swift, Brett Freemo, they're not on that wage, but they're offering way more. It's Cam Scott in the centre last night, I must admit, had a very good game. He stood up and, you know, he took some critics. He took some pelters after Huddersfield because, unfortunately, he was out of position and probably at fault for, you know, two or three of the chars. But there's been moments with Cam Scott. He's still young, but, you know, he's raw. The problem with these young kids now is, where do they play? Because there's no reserve grade. And as I say, if they're not getting first team opportunities, look at Jack Brown. He's probably played about, what, 15, 20 games in the past 2.5 years. How is he supposed to develop as a 21-year-old? Same with Cam Scott to an extent. But, yeah, you got more out of him than you did out of Fanua last night. And it's big earners. Again, you mentioned at the start, Josh Reynolds. He's a marquee player. Problem is with our spine, and I've mentioned this a few times this year, is that, and it goes back to the squad, we need our best 17 out there or the whole show, and that's the case with our span as well. They need the one out there, they need the six, they need the seven, they need a nine. Everyone can see that. It's just really frustrating. Again, it bows down to the squad management and who we've signed, who we've retained, who we've let go, and obviously there's been some horrendous decisions since our last cup win in 2017, and the alarming rate we've gone backwards is it really is disturbing. It's worrying. have got to a situation now where we literally do rely on a handful of players, and without those handful of players or without them all together, we're a shadow of what we could be or what we should be. And
because our first 17, I'd back against most clubs. We get our first choice 17 out on that pitch, then I'd say we could on our day beat any team in that league. I really believe that. I really do. But the problem becomes is that how often does a professional sports team line up 1 to 17 on their squad list? Never. Because there's always going to be players injured, players out of form, players coming in, players, you know, out of favour with the coach. There's always going to be that because that's a professional sport. The problem is that we've got no strength in depth, you know, and you know, Shaw long-term injured, but we knew that. You know, we came into the season knowing that, didn't we? You know, Connor's going to be your number one. Well, that's great. Fantastic. Connor gets injured. Oh, Christ, now what do we do? Oh, you know, you've got Connor Wynn. Oh, okay, yeah, Connor Wynn. But yeah, you've got Swift as well. And then we're having to bring someone in from on loan from second division Batley. And, you know, and it just seems like, you know, I mean, we talked about this last week, didn't we? When we had the A team, when we were told that we had to run a reserve grade and we signed Langtree and Zongu and all of those players, knowing that they probably would never make a first grade debut ever. I mean, Langtree didn't, and Zongu played one or two games, I think, for us, and that was it.
One game.
At least we had that strength in depth. That you had players that were training with the first team that weren't 17 years old, you know, and you could actually throw in there and think, well, they'll do a job. We don't want to get back to that. You know, was it? I can't even remember what year it was. But, you know, when we had Sam Obst and we had, you know, players like that, and you look at them and think, well, they played a handful of games for us. But they were all coming in on loan at the end of the season and stuff. We don't want that again. And I don't think the sport is capable of sustaining that amount of professional players at the moment, the way that rugby league's going. What I'm seeing online as well, mate, just incidentally, just kind of away from Hull, the amount of people I'm seeing saying, this is the least interested in rugby league I've ever been.
Mm.
You know? People just getting fatigued by it, sick of it. Mismanagement of the game at the highest level, the fact that Sky don't really seem to give a shit about it anymore, the fact that we're getting less money for the product, all the rest of it, the fact that the Rugby League World Cup and the NRL seem to be calling the shots, and it just seems like a lot of people are just going, you know, and washing their hands of the sport. I think we're in a really dangerous situation right now. And I think, you know, the sport needs a strong Hull side. It needs two strong Hull sides, arguably, but it certainly needs a stronger left side. And it just feels like at the moment, we're just in a little bit of free fall. You've got to hope, after what we've been saying over the last couple of weeks, with the fact that we seem to be getting our junior thing right now, we're opening up these little centres of excellence everywhere, and you've got to hope that that does bear fruit in the next couple of years. You know, and it's not sexy now, but in 4 or 5 years when we are getting the cream of young talent through, you've got to hope that we can do that. And we can do what Penrith have done in the NRL and what Leeds did in the late 90s. And arguably what Wigan have always done is get that best of the junior talent and nurture it and bring it through. But unfortunately, we need to be strong now as well, and we're not.
No, we're really not. We've thrown our eggs into a very small basket, haven't we? And that's the problem. And it's interesting as well. You look at St Helens. So obviously they haven't played in 16 days prior to Monday night since winning the Challenge Cup final. And when all got beat by Huddersfield, all the excuses came out about COVID, not training, not match fit, not match sharp, blah, blah, blah. And you're sort of thinking, okay, maybe there's some mileage in there. Okay, yeah, okay. To some extent, not 40 points worth of excuses, but you're sort of thinking, okay, Leeds, defeat, same excuses come out. You're sort of thinking, nah, I'm not having this now. I'm not having it. You look at St Helens last night. So like I say, they haven't trained. They probably had one session in 2 weeks because of the COVID, obviously, outbreak that they've had at the club. They've come back in. They've got key players out as well. There was no Theo Farge last night, no Regan Grace, no James Bentley, no Aggie Parsi. Didn't show, though, did it? Because they can cover those holes. They had Lewis Dodd, who came in at half-back, did a very good job. You know, Jack Wellsby on the wing getting an hat-trick. That's the difference. And again, you just mentioned two kids there who are literally embedded in the St Helens system, and they come through and they just charm out like it's nothing. Like you said, they've done it for years, as of Wigan, as of Penrith now, as of Melbourne for God knows how long. And that's the thing.
There's your difference. There's your difference, mate, with a side that's got class and a side that hasn't. When we have that layoff, we say we're rusty. You know, it's no surprise that we lost because we haven't been training together. We haven't been blah, 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 blah. That's because we haven't got a classy squad. We've got a squad of journeymen and grafters, and that's about it, you know? Whereas when Saints do it, they're champion at the bit, ready to go. Fresh is the word that people use. You know, they're out for exactly the same amount of time that we were. We're rusty, they're fresh.
Yeah.
What's the difference? The only difference is coaching. It's the makeup of the squad and the coaching of that squad.
Yeah, it's the way they play.
To be honest, it's the same bloody thing. It's just that's an organisational thing, I think.
No, I agree. I absolutely agree. But again, I look at the two sides, Hull and St Helens, and the speed of what they play at. It was just worlds apart. I mean, St Helens' rook is absolutely outstanding. James Roby, again, like I say, he's 35 or whatever, and he still rips it up. I mean, yeah, he's not as brilliant as he once was, but he's still a bloody very good hooker. Probably still in the top four or five in the comp easily. And he absolutely ripped us apart again. You know, players pushing either side of it. It's a simple game at the time. You play fast, you'll bring that energy. You'll play direct. You'll be more. You know, you'll win more games than you lose. And look at all. It was slow. It was laboured. The passing was. It wasn't crisp. Our execution was shocking. It's just, yeah, as I say, we're literally relying on a handful of players. We're literally on Connor in attack to produce the goods for us. We're literally relying on Satai to make the ground for us, and we don't deserve Chris Satai. We really don't. He is phenomenal. I tell you what, we'll just slag the club off for some of the management, what they've done. I tell you what, they deserve a little brownie point for getting Chris Satai, because he shouldn't be playing in England. He should be in the NRL. He is that good.
Yeah, totally. And look, to be honest, as much as it pains me to say it, he was spotted, 100% spotted by Radford.
Yep.
You know, because he'd hardly troubled the first grade at the Warriors. He was playing in reserve grade. You know, he's been spotted there by Radford completely. And look, without me dropping names, I did bump into Noel Cleal in town here, because he lives locally to here, about a year and a half ago. And sorry, my phone's going off. And shut up, Siri. Bumped into Noel Cleal, and he said that Hull had been, when he was he's at Manly, and he said Hull had been sniffing around a player for a long time, and you know, unfortunately it hadn't gone through, and this player had ended up going to the Warriors, and that was Liggy Sow. So Hull have had their eye on Liggy Sow for years and years before he actually made the move. And the fact that we got Satai as well, who's Sow's best mate, means that they really came as a kind of package deal. And look, to be honest, a magnificent piece of business, a really good piece of business. Best two overseas forwards, or two of the best overseas forwards in the league, I think, with Sow and Satai on their day.
Satai ain't even a debate.
No.
It's a fact, isn't it?
No. Yeah, he's just this season he's just grown, and a lot of it is because there's been no help. You know, he's our pack leader. He's long term injured. You know, and we're probably a prop short anyway. So without Tag and without the prop that we are arguably short, Satai either has to perform or wither and die, and he's chosen to perform, and you know he's been an absolute revelation this year, really has. I mean, player's player, supporters player of the year, without a doubt, I'd say.
Yeah, he will be. He has to be. He's been absolutely phenomenal, like you say. Yeah, but again, when you just mentioned the prop short thing, I look at Hull last year. Look at the squad from 2020 to 2021. Obviously, we've gained Josh Reynolds, but you sort of think, we lost last year. We lost two forwards in, obviously, Gareth Ellis, who retired, and Josh Jones, who obviously the piss-taking little git who never wanted to be in the first place, and he's buggered off to Huddersfield. So we lost two players. Who would have replaced them?
Agreed. But we have to remember as well, Josh Jones, when we signed him, was a current England international.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not just sort of the sign. I'm saying, Why didn't we replace him? You know, why have we thrown all our eggs into a basket? I mean, the management is, again, you go back to Fenua again, because the money he's on is ridiculous. You're sort of thinking, okay, why? You know, what's Jamie Shaw on? What's the length of his deal? It's ironic how the length of his deal was never actually officially announced. Just said, oh yeah, Jamie Shaw, we've honoured the contract. But we don't know how long it is. And someone told me at the game last night it's 3 years. I bloody hope that's not true. If he's been given 3 years when you've just signed Josh Reynolds on a 3-year deal as a marquee player, you've given Connor the fullback shirt, you've still got Snead contracted for another year. What are we doing? Who are these people running the club? If fans can see it, I just can't get my head around. Adam Pearson's been here 10 years now. He's seen this happen before. He saw this. And it's interesting when people say we need to hire a football manager, because we had one in 2013. He was called Sean McRae. You might remember him, yeah, ex-LFC coach for 4 years. His management of that squad, bringing people like Jacob Miller in, Joe Arundel. You know, there was Chris Tilson. There was an absolute mess for Lee Radford to sort out. And it took a while to get going. Obviously, it took 3 years for Radford to get the Deadwood out the squad that he didn't want and bring the players he wanted in, and then obviously he'll go back to back and win the cup, don't they? So should have achieved a lot more as well, that goes without saying. But it's frustrating because we're literally at that same cycle now where we've gone backwards at an alarming rate. We haven't signed the right players, we haven't kept the right players, we've probably kept some of the wrong players, we've re-signed some of the wrong players, and we're back to square one again. It is incredibly frustrating. And this is what winds me up when Adam Pearson whinges about money all the time and saying, oh, fans need to do this and fans need to do that. Apparently it's £30 to get in for the two home games. £30 each. £32 in some quarters. I'm thinking, you can't charge that and expect people to turn up if they haven't renewed because of COVID, or if they've lost the job, or if they just wasn't sure if they'd get to a game given what's going on in the UK. But literally all he does is moan about money. Every time he does his programme notes, there's hints about money. Every time he speaks in the local media, Old Daily Mail, Umberside, whatever, it's all about money, 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 money. So if you want to complain about money, get your house in order. You wouldn't have any sympathy for the bloke whose roof is leaking, who's just bought shit tiles, would you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, you're right. You're right. And look, we've got to balance this against the fact that 5 weeks ago, we were absolutely singing Hull's praises, right? And saying, you know, Hodgson he's come in and we look a different team and we're playing differently and blah, blah, blah. And you've got to balance this against the fact that currently we've got a bit of an injury crisis and we've got players playing out of position, we've got players missing and all the rest of it. But you're right. All we've been doing, really, is papering over the cracks. Our squad is massively unbalanced. And getting rid of Farima, all right, yeah, the only reason that it's Farima and not Fanua is because Farima was out of contract and Fanua isn't. That's the only reason Farima's going over Fanua. Let's not forget. But we're getting rid of Farima and signing, hopefully, a forward from somewhere, or a hooker, maybe, or somebody from somewhere. That's the only, and that sounds like that's going to be just about the only business we do. Because by the sounds of it, more or less everyone signed up. You know, you look at that out of contract list that came out not so long back. You know, and since then, Satai signed a deal. Since then, Fasher signed a deal. You know, and you look at it and you think, well, that's more or less us done for next year. We're looking at maybe bringing in another forward from somewhere, but, you know, wow, that's it. We've got one quota place coming up because Farima's going. You'd hope that's going to go on a forward. But it's pretty slim pickings. There's not a lot out there. I've seen some outlandish reports and silly names being mentioned by people that should know better and people that probably don't know as much as they think they know.
Sam Cassiano.
Sam Cassiano, why would you?
Well, I've had some fun with that one.
You know, you might as well say Willie Mason, for Christ's sake. You know, I mean, there are a couple of props over here, and I detailed a few in a blog a couple of weeks back, and we mentioned someone here as well. I'm still thinking it's not going to be someone who's a name. It's going to be someone that's a bit of a workhorse and a bit of a dark horse for us. But, you know, that's not worked badly when you go back to your Satires and your Sows, who have probably been two of the most unheralded yet great signings we've made in years. I still think it's going to be someone like Thomas McKayley from the West Tigers if we go for a quota forward. I'd still like to see, is it Ikehifo? Because I thought he would have been a good signing.
Sebastian Ikehifo.
Yeah, I think exactly what we need. But I think he's contracted now. I don't think he's an option. You know, we haven't gone out and signed a really good English player for probably since we got Griffin. You know, I mean, we all thought that's what Jones was going to be, and he wasn't. You know, you can argue that Swift has probably fallen into that category a little bit this year, but he certainly didn't last year. And he's not as dynamic as Griffin, and he's not as a game changer like Griffin is. Probably Griff's the last one we've gone out and signed that you can point to and gone, that was a really good domestic signing.
He's been an outstanding signing, Griffin.
Sorry?
An outstanding signing, Griffin.
Oh, totally.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, for what he did to Rovers in that £1 million game alone, and I think at that point he'd already signed for Hull. So, you know, watching him cut Rovers apart was a double-edged sword of joy, wasn't it? Because he was putting Rovers down and you're thinking, oh, bloody hell, he's going to be doing that for us next year. That's great. What a signing. And, you know, Connor's been a great signing from Huddersfield. Sneed was a good signing. But apart from that, you look at it and you think, when was the last time we signed a really good English player that's going to really set the world alight? And yeah, we just don't seem to be in the market. We don't seem to be in the conversation when a player becomes available. You know, it's always a Leeds or a Saints or a Wigan or a Warrington. You know, there doesn't really seem, we don't seem to be part of the conversation, and it worries me a little bit that we're not going for these players because we're not identifying that we need them, or players aren't interested in coming to our club. And I've got to hope it's the former, and not the latter.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, and it does make you wonder. But then you start thinking, well, how much room have Hull got? It's like you say, George Williams obviously pops up and Warrington get their mitts on him. But why would we sign him when we've obviously got Josh Reynolds on marquee, we've got Jake Connor on big money?
How are Warrington under the cap?
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people whinging to me about this yesterday. We walked past me, sewing up the cream, obviously, in the game, saying, how are Warrington under the cap? We spend exactly the same as Warrington and St Helens. That's what's worrying. That squad last night that played St Helens cost the same. No, there's very little difference there. There's loopholes, isn't there? There's two marquees now. There's a live cap. You know, there's obviously the brown envelopes that he can send to the players. Misses is don't want to go down that road. But you know, there is loopholes, and there's ways you can get around the cap. And teams have manipulated it for years. Sometimes you can do it a little bit too much and get caught out and get points deductions. And if you're Wigan, you get them rescinded and you get your points back. But it is what it is. Or you can cheat the cap to stay up as well, can't you, if you're Wigan? But there is loopholes and there's ways of getting around it. And teams have done it for years. We do it right now. We spend an absurd amount of money. And that's what really winds me up when you think, yeah, we're on par with St Helens. They're getting that out of their squad and we're getting this. And it is, it's worlds apart. And it's frustrating. And that's why we go on rants. And that's why we spent the past half an hour ranting about it. But, you know, you just mentioned 5 weeks ago, we were, you know, championing, singing the praises, championing them. You know, this is absolutely brilliant. And it's effort. And the effort hadn't gone anywhere. I mean, the effort was there against Leeds. I mean, it was just because we couldn't attack for toffee, you know. The effort was there, though. There was moments where we had sets where we were knocking 10 balls of shit out of Leeds and, you know, rampaging downfield. And you can't say there's no effort in Chris Satay and Ligi Sow and Adam Swift. Of course there is. But, that effort, that grit, that determination, it's held back from the decisions that are happening off the field. That's where all the anger isn't coming to the squad of players. The effort they've put in throughout this year has been, it's been sensational. I ain't got a qualm with that. My gripe is off the field, and the club have got to get it right. And this is where I have my beef with Mr. Pearson, because, as I say, you can't whinge about money when you're spending what you're spending, the returns you're getting from it, when you compare it to a Warrington, when you compare it to a St. Helens. And yeah, we've just got to get that side right. And it's all right again saying, oh yeah, we need a footballing manager. Motu Tony was outstanding, but as I say, the last one before that, Sean McRae, was a nightmare. So it's be careful what you wish for in some respects. And obviously, we've got one right now in James Clark, aren't we? We all know him. He's a bloke who used to say good evening East Ham. He's learning on the job. He's practically running the club. He has been doing for about 4 years now. And that's, again, because Adam Pearson won't invest in the staff. And I know people that have left the club. There was that Richard Munson who left to go to Widnes, but there was people left, right and centre who left the club. And it was literally a short string staff on a show budget. And basically ran by James Clark. And I will never call him because I know the work he puts in. Sometimes he probably does about 70, 80 hours a week. It's ridiculous. He's got Hull FC in his heart and he literally grafts his ass off for the club. So necessarily I won't slag him off because I know what he does. The block stops again with the owner. That's the problem. And it's his business. You know, Hull FC is his business. This is his baby. Why would you own a business like that? Surely you want your business, you want people who know what they're doing in different jobs, you want more than one bloke running it all, you want people in different departments. I don't get it. I wouldn't run my business like that anyway, especially a business that is obviously Hull FC and is a, you know, seven figures, something we, me and you can only dream about. But yeah, that's what frustrates me. It really does. And again, I look at St Helens last night and they're just streets better than us. It's as simple as that. They're faster, they're slicker. And again, how do we get to that level again? Well, we've got to sort our holes out. We've got to sign a prop. We've got to get a hooker in. And I think we really need to bang that drum as a fan base right now and say we know Houghton is not good enough anymore. And it's a sad reality because he's a club legend. Some of the things Danny Houghton's done for FC have been phenomenal. And they have been since 2007 when he's made his debut. But unfortunately, it's 2021 now. It's 14 years later and he's not that player anymore. It's as simple as that. And is Jordan Johnston the answer? I don't think so. Again, he's another one built on graft. Like you say, that player literally based his game off graft. His distribution isn't on par with the top 10 hookers, never mind top 5 or top 3. We need a top quality 9, and I really would be throwing everything we've got to get Nathan Peets for Huddersfield right now. I mean, you mentioned him last week. You sort of think when he came over to Lee, we're talking about his background and obviously at Parramatta, the way he got shipped out there to go to Gold Coast. He was an Origin player.
He's better than Lee and he's better than Huddersfield.
It would be, imagine him in a side when you've got Chris Satire and off him, Liggy Sell, Scott Taylor. You know, you had Dick, two quality halfbacks. Let's not forget Sneed. As I say, when you've got your one there, you've got your 9, you've got your 6. And he's attacked the line this year. He's looked good. I mean, what is frustrating is, like you say, he's doing everything rushed now, and he seems to be arguing all the time with the referee. I mean, well, I don't blame him on that front because the standard of officiating is atrocious across the board in every single game. But he's not channeling his energy in the right areas, is he? And he's sort of thinking his kicking game, his infield kicking game, he can produce a sublime 40-20 1 minute and he's put a kick up to the corner and will score 1 minute. But then it's sandwiched in between kicks that go dead. It's sandwiched between kicks that are sliced, that don't come off how he wants. And
He looks rushed.
He
looks rushed. Yeah. And you know, the reason he looks rushed is because he's the only one with the kicking game at the moment because Connor's injured. So every opposition player knows he's going to be kicking the ball, so they're just targeting him. At least when you've got Connor on the field, you've got the opposition in two minds because you don't know where the kick's coming from. You know, and I think that's a major part of it. You get Connor back into that team, we're a different team, I think. I really do.
Well, Connor's one of the best top three in Southport, isn't he?
Yeah, totally. I mean, you look at that 40-20 that Connor kicked against Saints.
In the court.
And he just didn't seem to be, there was no effort in it. He just leaned back and just strokes his foot through it and whack 40-20.
It's all natural with Connor. It's just got the natural talent he's got is freakish. You people like you, old people like you and my dad.
Old people. Jesus Christ. We go with old 47, people. Mate. 47. Yeah.
You guys talk about Steve Norton, and when you guys talk about Steve Norton, I always hear two words: time and space. Jason Smith was the same. Time and space. Yeah. You have to be class to have time and space, and that's one thing with Jake Connor. He always seems to have the time. He always seems to have the space, and his execution, as I say, the raw talent that he's. His disposal is freakish.
It's effortless.
Yeah, effortless. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know what? I mean, you know, you kind of touched on refereeing there and everything. And, you know, we spoke a little bit offline before we press record on this that, you know, the standard refereeing, it's dropped alarmingly. But there is no excuse, however, for people with homophobic slurs at the referee last night because that could lose the club points. Or a fine, which we can ill afford. We just need to be very, very careful with that kind of stuff. But you know what? I honestly think, and we tried to do it a few years back, because I remember Dennis Betts being part of like a pilot scheme. We really need to get ex-players into the refereeing ranks, I think. I think there's this, you've got people that are intimately associated with the game, no players, know the game, know the tricks and the little tricks that other players will use to try and pull the wool over the referee's eyes. They're fit because they've only just finished playing. I honestly think the RFL should go out and plug these gaps in our refereeing ranks by offering a kind of a fast track to ex-professional players. I think that would really, really change things up a little bit.
I like it in theory, yeah, but a big problem I have with refereeing is you sort of think, right, okay, I can go and be a full-time Super League referee and earn a certain amount of money, or I'm Gareth Hewer. I can go be a solicitor and earn 3-4 times the amount of money. I mean, how many times have you seen a referee leave to pursue other career opportunities? Because it's not worth it. You know, if you're not a full-time official, the money's not great, and this is a problem. And there's other beef where I've got with the RFL, where you've got the CEO sat on 320 grand or whatever a year, and you haven't got a proper refereeing department, and it's led by a questionable bloke in Steve Gamson. And yeah, it's going backwards at an alarming rate. I mean, I would say the referees aren't helped with the guidelines that they're told to, you know, use in the judgment. That holds them back massively. I mean, I'm looking at the Warrington Leeds game and the Josh Charnley try, where the touch judge sends it up and, you know, goes a try on the field, and there was no video replay that conclusively showed that ball on the ground, and the try gets given because it gets sent up as a try. And there was one last night which ironically went in our favour. St Helens were 16-0 up. Adam Swift, Tommy Makinson go up for a ball, just competing for it. Both had their eyes glued to the ball. Adam Swift knocks it on. They're saying that Tommy Makinson took him in the air. Load of bollocks. Yeah. It was just a challenge in the air. It should have been a try. Naguama walks over. It should have been given.
No consistency at all.
But these are happening week in, week out. It's the same with the bunker.
Well, it's happening. That's the thing, mate. It's happening. You know, it's not just inconsistency between matches. It's inconsistency sometimes in the same set of six. You know, that's what's maddening about it. It's inconsistency in the same game. Never mind inconsistency across a round of football or even a season. You know, I mean, it's inconsistency in the same game. You know, it's how can the same bloke see this more or less same incident two different ways, 30 seconds apart?
Yeah, and that's literally it. And you look at, again, the way rugby league's officiated now in terms of big hits and contacts that might be. I mean, the Jordan Johnston sin bin was very ash. It was absolutely ridiculous. It's never a sin bin in a million years. It's a penalty, it was late, but if that's a sin bin, where the hell is the game going? I always used to laugh at people that said, oh, the game's going soft and the game's not what it was when, you know, they watched it as a lad. And I sort of thinking now, I completely get it. And I've mentioned this point a few times when we've done this podcast. But you look at the game now, it's unrecognisable from 20 years ago. It's probably a completely different game to what it was 40 years ago. And I reckon some of these halfbacks, like, you know, your Andy Gregory's, your Peter Stirlings, are probably watching the, you know, people like Jordan Johnston get sin bin for that, and thinking, I caught more than that every single game and I just laughed it off.
Yeah.
That's a sin bin now, really? It's like, then the Leaky Style one. I mean, it was a bad one, but come on, it was actually 60 seconds before where Percival, I think he took young Cam Scott's head off. Nothing happens. It was a penalty at that, and that was it.
That's the problem. Nothing happened.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to get to a stage like the NRL where every head eye contact is a sin bin. Or
because when a referee loses control, and we've seen referees lose control of a game. You know, when one thing goes unpunished and it just opens the floodgates. Hull away at Featherstone in the Cup 3 years ago, 4 years ago, whenever it was, when Shaul got taken out before the ball had got anywhere near him, the opposition player came flying through and took him out. And then that game just degenerated into an absolute farce after that. And, you know, you had 5 players off the field at one point, didn't you? 3 sent off and 2 sin bins, or 3 sin bins and 2 sent off, or whatever it was. It was ridiculous. That's when a ref absolutely 100% loses control over a game. And I think that's what they're kind of worried about at the moment. In, you know, like last night, you know, the first one, yeah, it was a penalty for Hull. And you know, you could argue that it's probably a sin bin when Scott gets taken out. But then, you know, immediately afterwards, when Satai does something similar, the referee goes, oh, well, I've got to put the line in the sand now, because this is I'm starting to lose control. It's starting to degenerate. That's 2 head-high tackles. In 2 minutes, therefore, now I've got to take action. The problem you've got is that it becomes, you know, wildly inconsistent, because you're officiating on, you're not officiating each individual incident. You're officiating on the emotion that you're feeling because of the previous, you know, action you took or inaction you took, you know, and that's not good for a referee, because then you're roller coastering, you're all over the place, and I think that's what happened last night. I really do. Yeah. I'd love to see ex-players. I really would. I think as an idea, I know I'm blowing my own trumpet, but I think as an idea, that's not a bad one. Getting a getting a tranche of ex-players together and saying, right, let's fast track you into the game.
But keeps him in the game as well, doesn't it? Which is obviously,
yeah.
You know, my biggest gripe with British, one of my biggest gripes with British Rugby League is, all right, you've got people like Hilary Hamley. You don't hear from him. You know, he was involved in that Man of Steel point thing when it came in a couple of years back.
Yeah.
But you don't hear from him. He's arguably the greatest British player to ever play the game.
We had a couple of dodgy attempts at coaching and that was it, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, he should be the poster boy for, like, you know, obviously not the on-field product, but off the field, he should be involved. And again, it's like, you see it all the time, if a player doesn't go into coaching, they're lost. I mean, must admit, all are very good in the way that we look after our ex-players. Obviously, there's an ex-players association, and, you know, we're very good in getting the dinners. You know, obviously, we've got the three Kiwis, Gary Campbell, Dan O'Hara, James Lulai, they're coming back to all at the end of the year, in December, that'll be great. We had Peter Sterling last year, you know, we had... I mean, even in Hull, we had Paul Gallen come over for a dinner, and he sold out a room at Lazzat's in Cottingham, and it's just... I think we do get that area really right. But yeah, I agree. I think there is some scope for that. There is some mileage to get, you know, ex-players involved, because they're frustrated as well. I mean, they say... I mean, you saw Jake Truman. He tweeted during the Owen St. Helens game last night, another game ruined. And, you know, we all know who that's directed at. And you see it all the time. Leon Price is a big one for it, saying, you know, it's not all about you, and he's talking about the referee. Best referee in performance means you're anonymous. If you don't notice them, they've done well.
100%. Yeah. I remember, and again, name dropping, but I had a long conversation once with Tim Mander, the famous Aussie referee, you know, the guy who always, at the start of every game, the kickoff, he'd always go, woohoo, you know, and everything. He was really good. He turned out to be a bit of a dick, because he's now a conservative politician in Queensland, and he's one of these, you know, real fucking rabid right-wing lunatics. But as a referee, he was a really good referee. And I had a conversation with him about it, and he said to me, he said, look, at the end of the day, he said, I used to play, but he said, I realised I wasn't good enough.
Mm.
He said, I was a winger or a centre, and he said, I probably wasn't quick enough, I wasn't hard enough, I couldn't tackle hard enough. He said, and I thought, you know, is this what I'm going to be all the time? I'm going to be a second grader, I'm going to be a fringe player, I'm never going to make it. And he said, it got to about the age of 20, and he just went, no. If I want to stay close to the game and I want to be close to fantastic players, I'm going to have to be a referee. And he said, I just realised I wasn't skillful enough to play, but I wanted to be part of the game, and I wanted to be able to be, you know, the game that I've loved and the game that I've always wanted to be part of. And the only way I could really give back to the game that's given me so much joy as a youth was to go into rugby league refereeing. And he just decided that then and there he hung his playing boots up, picked up his refereeing whistle and went for it that way. And there's really something to be said for that. You know, if that's the way that we should be pushing it, is that, you know, if you want to be a part of it, but you don't think you're good enough, or, you know, you're not good enough to play, be a referee. Make a difference. Be involved. Be close to, if you can't be great, be close to greatness.
Yeah, I get it, but then I sort of think, like, these players have watched referees get... I mean, must admit, that old crab was on James Charles' back for minute one last night, screaming at him for everything, and some of it was justified, but some of it was just down to the fact that St. Helens are a lot better rugby league team than Hull. But the black and white glasses brigade obviously don't see that, and they just see James Charles in the middle. They just see St. Helens offside at every play of the ball. They just see every tackle high, every St. Helens pass forward, everything Hull do perfect, everything the referee does is a disgrace. Fortunately, you get that. You get the black and white, well, you get the rose-tinted glasses brigade in every club, don't you? But
yeah, of course.
A referee is a tough job, isn't it? It really is. And I would like to see something like that, like you've just mentioned, come to fruition, but I also understand that it would actually want to be a referee. Do I want to be a referee? No. I couldn't think of anything worse than getting abused for 80 minutes because I'm not giving that fans team the decision. it's ironic because there's some decisions last night that I whinged at, the sin bin being one. But again, that's a guideline come down from above. That's not necessarily James Charles' fault. That's he's done what he's been told to do. Likewise with the video referee, with the Charlie incident, they've been told, you know, last night again, the video referee obviously disallowing the try from Kevin Naguama when Makinson and Swift come up. Again, that's not him making the decision, that's the guidelines that he's been told to implement. sort of think, well, the problem obviously lies with those who were sat in a prawn sandwich room making the decisions, who haven't got a clue what the, you know, what they're doing. A bit like the disciplinary panel, when we see that every week. And
yeah,
can't wait for that to come out now, because I think, like you said, I was going to cop something. Connor Wynne will probably cop something for the forearm against Leeds. Yeah. Not like we're short on players and need these to, you know, have a chance of winning against Warrington or Catalans, is it? And it's going to be, yeah, frustrating. But you can see why fans another get back. Disillusionized, like you said.
Yeah, another back-to-the-wall performance. Yeah, exactly. You defeat before you take the pitch.
Yeah, really frustrating. One final point then before we go on to NRL Club Connection. You mentioned, as I say, about fans being disillusionised there. I know COVID has obviously been a big part of our life for the past 16, 17 months, but the crowd last night was just over 7,000. Last year it was 12,399. It was a point made by redv.net. I think it's Kev who runs our social media. Nice bloke, I don't mind him. And it's a good point. As I say, it's a Monday night, it's on TV, and we have just come out of the COVID restrictions. But even still, is that a 5,000 swing at home? Or is that more down to the point that it's £32 a ticket? Or is it more down to the point, like you say, that fans are becoming disillusionized with the game? I think there's mileage in all three of those.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think there's still a lot of people that don't want to be in a crowd because of COVID. I think that's a big thing. And I think, you know, when you see some of the commentary about, you know, when people are wearing masks, you get other people saying, "Ah, sheep, idiots," you know, that kind of thing. I think that there's a real section of the community that don't want to be in a crowd at the moment. I think that's A. I think B, we're in a bad run of form at the moment. That doesn't help. C, it's very expensive, and a lot of people have lost money during COVID and might have lost jobs, or certainly have downsized, or are really being a lot more careful with the finances, and it's expensive. That's C. You know, I think that I don't think there's any one factor. I think there's a real combination of factors, and unfortunately, I think that... you know, it's a dodgy time for the sport. I really do. Yeah. What did Rovers and Catalans get? I didn't see that. What was their attendance?
I ain't got a clue. All right, come on, mate. I rang you up this morning. I didn't even know there was two NRL games that were played yesterday. I didn't even know those results. So I'm not going to look at Robbins' attendance, am I?
Sorry.
I've been in a very messy bubble the past few days. Literally, I printed up the cream. I did some online stuff for Friday. Literally went to Cot Tigers Saturday, Sunday. Back to up the cream stuff Monday. I've literally been in a bubble. Watched Penrith get smashed by Melbourne as well. That was great, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. Because I'm just looking. It's not on the BBC website, and it's not on the Super League website. And I don't think it's on the Hull Daily Mail website either, the actual official attendance.
Brilliant.
So, yeah, dodgy.
Yeah, well, it definitely got given a 7,000. 7,000 and something. It was 7-0, something. Usually I make a point of typing it on my phone as soon as I hear it, but the tannoy at the MKM Stadium, whatever it's called now, isn't great. And I must admit, you struggle to hear that bloke. Young lad in the media department, one of the volunteers, you actually struggle to, you know, to actually hear him and to understand him half the time.
How bad's that, one of the volunteers?
Yeah. But this is what I mean about Adam Pearson. Get your business in order, mate. Stop whinging about money every 2 minutes. Every time you go in the bloody media, every time you write programme notes, and get some proper staffing. Who know what they're doing, because it's really frustrating. How he runs his business like that is beyond me, and it shows in it shows in our squad right now, in the management of the squad, who we've signed, who we've retained, who we've let go. Unfortunately, that's been the theme for this podcast, but we can all see it as fans, can't we? We can all see that we need a prof, we can all see that we need a hooker, we can all see that Finnell is a liability, we can all see that Reynolds is on absolutely massive money needs to be reliant on the 1, the 6, the 7 and the 9 all playing together to perform. And yeah, that's worrying. That's not a good look at all, especially when you've got the top sides in this league that can throw kids in to cover their holes and nothing happens. And it shows we're a long way away from being where we want to go. But as I say, we've been carried by effort this year. We've been carried by grit. We've been carried by determination. That area I've got no qualms with. As I say, the effort really has been outstanding this year, but yeah, we really do need to get our shop in order. Anyway, I'm looking forward to this. Anyway, Tommy Rich has decided to go for New Zealand Warriors in our club connection this week, so off you go, Paul.
Yeah, right. Now, look, the caveat to this is that, you know, this is New Zealand Warriors, who have only been a club since 1995. So obviously, those Kiwis that we got before 95, a lot of them played for Wellington, Auckland, Mount Smart, you know, or whatever. So I'm calling this Warriors because this kind of is Auckland Warriors, which was the original team in 95, and then became New Zealand Warriors early 2000s, I think, and dropped the Auckland part of it. So two Hull FC players were foundation players of the New Zealand Warriors in 1995 in their very, very first season. And that was Stephen Kearney, obviously, who we got much later. We got 10 years later. And Hitra Okasini as well. Now, Hitra ended up at Hull 98, I think, so only 3 years later. He'd been playing in England before that. He'd been at Carlisle. And he actually signed from... he signed for the New Zealand Warriors from Carlisle, had 3 years, with the Warriors, then came back and played for Hull and ended up playing, I think he ended up playing at Workington or Whitehaven and still lives in Cumbria now. And his family have all grown up in England as well. Real missed opportunity here, Hitra Okasini. He was a big second row prop, but never quite hit his straps with us. Hitra, would you remember Hitra a little bit before your time?
Or? I was 6 years old.
6 years old. Jesus Christ, I feel old. never really hit his straps for us and ended up at Workington, I think. After that, you look at Shane Endicott. Again, you know, was a New Zealand national and actually played for Hull first before he played for the Auckland Warriors as they were then. Played for Hull 94-95 as a halfback. Frank Endicott, the great Frank Endicott, the coach, his son, and then ended up playing three full seasons for Auckland in the NRL. Finished up his career around about 99-2000, I think. Jason Timu as well, big prop Jason Timu. I think we only had him for a year, Jason Timu, and it was when Hull were toilet, you know. It's when we were very, very poor. That kind of early years of Super League for us, we had Jason Timu who wasn't.
Five wins out of 30 games beating Sheffield to stay up on the final day that year.
That kind of time, yeah. That time. No, Jason Timu was famous, though, for possibly the biggest hit any Hull FC player has ever given anyone, ever. And I can't remember where it was. We were away somewhere in Lancashire, and he absolutely smashed some bloke. Someone listening to this will know who it is, and please, if you do, make a note of it on the Twitter post that Dan puts out with the link to the podcast on, because I just remember it being an absolute monstrous hit, probably the only thing he did as a whole player. And then we look at Feka Paliasina, who obviously I think he's still with the club, isn't he? Is he still there as a player
welfare manager? Yeah, he's been doing some community coaching at my club, Cot Tigers, now, which is good to see.
Yeah, good.
It was obviously lad went viral, didn't he, scoring that try against West Hull last weekend?
Yeah. Yes. Feka, very famous over here for, I think there was a barnstorming run where he practically came off the team they were playing against that kicked off. He got the ball on his own line and just barnstormed and went half the length of the field and then passed to the fullback who was backing up, and you know, everyone was just going absolutely mad for Paliasina at the time. I think Andrew Voss was commentating that match. Really good player, Feka, and you know, we didn't probably get the best out of him. He probably came to us right at the end of his career, but on his day, an absolutely unplayable forward. And we go from the sublime to the even more sublime, Motu Tony, who we were lucky to have Motu Tony. Probably a player who suffered by the fact that he was quite a versatile player, and his utility value, I think, sometimes probably got the better of him a little bit. But what a player, you know, and for us to have him, you know, as a backup fullback in 2005 when Sean Briscoe went down with appendicitis was, you know, an absolute masterstroke. And you know, and then and then carried on his great service to the club by being a bloody good football manager and actually managing to do some real wheeling and dealing and get players in and stuff. And you got to remember as well, he started his career in England at Castleford and only played a handful of matches for Cas before we got him, and gave us great service over the years, you know, over 100 appearances for Hull, and finished his career off at Wakefield before he came back to the club in an advisory capacity. An absolute legend of the club, Motu Tony. And then we go from the sublime to the ridiculous, Sione Faumuina.
Three games
for Hull, and you know, one of them was good, and I think the other two were awful, weren't they?
Sent off in one, when he made his debut at Wakefield, they were sent off. And didn't even get picked for the Andrew Johns when we sent him on, when we beat Warrington on 71-0. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sione. came back 3 or 4 years later and played half a season with Castleford as well. It didn't really. More famous for being a Warriors player than any other team. I think he did play for Canberra and played for North Queensland as well. I think almost 100 appearances for the Warriors. And then we go to Epelahame Luaki. Again, another one who could have been anything, you know, real beast of a bloke. But just seemed to flatter to deceive a little bit, didn't he? He wasn't fantastic. But in flashes, he could be fantastic.
Remember that game against Saints in the fog?
Yes.
It was brilliant.
Yeah. Far between performances like that. We had him for 3 years. Obviously, he went to Wigan. He didn't really set the world on fire with Wigan. I think he finished his career at Bradford, actually. I think he did a really short stint at Bradford right at the end of his career. But unfortunately not the player that we thought we were going to get when we got him, you know. Todd Byrne, who was a Roosters player probably primarily, but did have a season or two with the Warriors before we got him. And you know, a good journeyman player, was never going to set the world on fire, wasn't the fastest winger. Famously, of course, when he was breaking down the wing in the 2003 Grand Final and was tackled by the cover defence of Penrith, lost the Roosters that game, Todd Byrne. And I don't think he ever really recovered from that. You know, from a confidence point of view. But he was a decent player and we had a year out of him. Wade McKinnon, who will always be a bit of an enigma for Hull, I think. But, you know, he, first couple of games he played for us, he looked absolutely unbelievable, didn't he? Mm. And then just faded away, didn't he? Was the official thing was homesickness?
Homesickness,
was it?
Yeah, then he went like travelling or something.
Just went walkabout. What a shame, because on his day, an absolutely devastating fullback.
He would have ripped some league apart.
Yeah, he would have. If we'd have kept his head right, he would absolutely have ripped Super League asunder, I think. He had that in him. What a missed opportunity, unfortunately, with McKinnon. Aaron Jeremiah as well, who obviously was our hooker alongside a very young Danny Houghton, before Danny Houghton kind of came into the ascendancy and Jeremiah became a little bit surface to requirements, and also had a couple of stints at Widnes as well, Aaron Jeremiah. Brett Seymour, who we've spoken about in a Bulldogs context a couple of weeks back, had a season with the Warriors. Sean Berrigan obviously had a couple of seasons with the Warriors as well. In fact, we released him to go to the Warriors and then he ended his career at Canberra a couple of years later. And then three current Hull players have also turned out for the Warriors. Carlos Tumavave, Liggy Sow and Chris Satay. And they're the only ones.
It's a good list, though.
It's a very good list. It's a weird list. There's some absolute class and some absolute dross.
That's fair. Yeah, but we seem to have a good connection at the moment with Polynesian players that obviously come from either New Zealand or the islands, and you know, that's obviously been the case with the three we've got now. We're obviously three of our best, and buzzing that we've still got Carlos for another 3 years, we've got Satai for another two. I mean, we all led to believe that we've got Sal for another two as well. They're three of the good ones out of the three of the ones that he can put in the good squad management category.
We might have another one yet, you know. Looks like Lee Sanamau has played his last game for the Warriors. He's decided he wants to go home to New Zealand and break the bubble, so he's not going to be playing for the Warriors for the rest of the year. He's only 31. I wouldn't be at all surprised if we were making a bit of a play for him as well.
Well, 31 is nothing, is it? I mean, people have shown he can go to your mid-30s now. So about how you look after
yourself. Been around a long time, though. Been around a long time. Made his debut in 2009. So he's been around a while. Warriors, North Queensland, St. George, back to the Warriors. So, yeah, 225 appearances-ish. So, yeah, and, you know, he's very, very capable of still turning it on. He's a decent player, as Lee Sanamau. I'd like, and he's hard as nails. I wouldn't mind seeing him in a whole shirt at all.
A compliment, like say, the Kiwi front row trio quite nicely. And, you know, you can throw Scott Taylor in there, get another one as well. That's a decent five, and then you can throw a 6-1 on the bench in either Kate or Alain. I'd be quite content with that. But yeah, it's all about obviously squad building, squad management. We've, as I say, we've just banged the drum for an hour, but we've really got to get it right. I mean, there's no point crying wolf all the time about money if you haven't got your house in order, and we've got to make the right decisions. And as I say, because the playing squad deserve it with the effort that they're throwing in.
Yeah, agreed.
But yeah, as I say, we'll just have to leave that there, and we'll look forward to Warrington on Sunday, and then Catalans a week on Friday. It definitely don't get any easier, but as always, thanks for your time, mate. Come on, you will.
No worries, mate. Cheers.